time to get started for the Aging Well Together show. Friends, I have missed you. This is my first time back in the studio in over a month. As loyal listeners may know, if you've listened to the last few shows, my sweet father passed away. And so I had to miss a few shows, and then we got iced in. And but we do have great shows that were able to be posted on the podcast, on the website. And so anyway, I am so glad to be back. And we have such a great show today. I am really excited. We have a wonderful local artist, Hollis Shatlan. Shatlan. Okay, well, all right, she'll talk about her name and the pronunciation, because there's a great story about it. But Hollis is a wonderful local artist. Her tagline to her work is awareness through art. She is an internationally renowned and award-winning artist. Her art addresses challenging social, environmental, and political themes already in the few minutes since we've met, and she's brought some pieces, and already I'm the folks of us in the studio that looked at her pieces are already, and I was like, I have so many questions, and I'm going to wait to do it on air. But as much as I'm so excited to dive into Hollis's work and all we can learn together, but before we dive into our show, as always, I want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. You can catch our show every Thursday. We hope that it's live, but as you know, we've had some pre-recorded shows. It's from 2 to 3 every Thursday. If you are close to us in the Carrboro area, you can listen to us on 103.5 FM or stream us live through WCOMFM.org. The Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the always helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. Besides being our wonderful sponsors and expert guests on the show, each week Marilyn over at the Orange County Department on Aging posts our previous shows on the website, so you can catch up on any of our past shows. And today, and here, I got to turn Alicia's mic on today. Hi, friend.
Hey, Heather. Hey,
I miss you so much.
I know.
I did. Alicia just joined us, and I did say how I've missed a bunch of shows, and I'm so glad. But Alicia, this is show 97.
Wow.
We are getting up there and impressive. So you can listen to any of our past 96 shows, and this show will be up soon on the Orange County website. You can also find a range of local Orange County aging resources. You just go to Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. Again, orangecountync.gov/aging. As we always say, if you don't add the NC, you're going to end up in Orange County, California. Mm-hmm. So orangecountync.gov/aging. If you have any questions about local resources and you want to talk to an actual person, you can call the Orange County Department on Aging at 919-968-2070. And if you have any questions about our shows or you want to suggest a topic or person or organization, Alicia and I have been deep into planning our 2026. Do you know we're booked now almost through up until May?
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Alicia was great about bringing Hollis in, and I'm so excited. And then we're just like, boom, 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 boom. We've got, but folks, we do have the other more than half of the year. So feel free to email me with suggestions of people or topics or organizations. And my email is agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. I always like to repeat, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. And thank you to those listeners who have been emailing. I'm now getting them like a few times a week. It's really fun.
You're popular. You're a celebrity.
I'm popular. All right. Alicia who came in, and I haven't seen her in so long, so I should be filled with love. But no, I always complain to you. Why did you pick that spot? I'm so short. Alicia's hiding from me behind the
you get to see the people that walk by.
Computer monitor. That's true. But Alicia's here. She's back with us. I'm back with her. She is one of the... You're hot.
Is that near?
You know, we haven't done that. Hollis doesn't know. We used to have our show in a different studio that had no air conditioning in the summer and no heat in the winter. And we are women of a certain age. And every show we would complain like, I'm so hot.
Because I thought, oh, it's going to be cold in here, but it's hot.
Yeah, I know. And look, I'm even though this is, this is a radio show, but look what I wore.
Oh, yeah.
That's so, for our listeners, last when we were in our other studio, see, Hollis, I've told you we were casual and we like to do tangents, and we had no heat. Alicia gave me a big talking to about not wearing tights and layers in the cold weather, and now we're in a place with actual temperature control and we're hot. But Alicia is here. She's an amazing wellness instructor. She's an amazing community volunteer. I'm so excited we are back together.
Me too.
And then, as for me, who's dropping things, I am Heather Altman. I am your host. I have been in the local aging services world here for over 25 years. Next year will actually be 30 years. Wow. So I think we're going to jump from 25 to 30 as soon as I should just say for 29 years, I've been in the aging services field here in our area. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I always say I'm a caregiver for older family members, I need to change that. Yeah. I have been I've been a caregiver for older family members. I still are. There's still other ones that are still there. And at 55, I'm focusing on my own changing needs.
55!
Yay! So I'm super invested in how we are all aging well together. All right, we are going to get to Hollis. Hollis, so excited for her to be here. Alicia introduced me to Hollis, and then I became obsessed and have been stalking her on the on her website. Normal people say research, but no, we say stalking. We like to stalk our guests. Mm-hmm. And so she said I could just call her Hollis because I don't want to do disrespect to her name, but she'll tell us the story of her name, which is beautiful. Hollis is an internationally recognized and award-winning artist specializing in textile painting. Through her work that addresses challenging social and environmental themes, Hollis reflects 12 years of experience living in West Africa and working with humanitarian organizations. She uses a distinctive style characterized by a dreamlike use of color and imagery. Her dye-painted scenes of multicultural life convey the untold stories of women, children, families, and the earth, and have been described as easy to gaze at but hard to forget. Mm-hmm. I've looked at her pieces, and I think that's beautifully described. She has an educational background in design and photography. We're going to talk all about that. And over 35 years experience as a professional artist, Hollis's work can be found in public and private collections throughout the world. In addition to creating her art, Hollis holds lectures and workshops in the United States and abroad, instructing students in subjects including color, drawing, design, dye painting, and quilting technique. We do all this because sometimes people don't like to share, even though we pull it out of them, share about themselves, but we like to kind of honor and love on people there. But Hollis, welcome to the Aging Well Together show. Yay!
Thank you.
Yeah. We have a lot. First of all, talk about why, because we already had this conversation, but this is a really neat story. Explain to everyone why I can't pronounce, besides me, why people have a hard time pronouncing your name and how it is pronounced and the story behind it, if you don't mind. It's a good story. Yeah. I'm sure you have to do it all the time.
Okay. So my husband is from Switzerland, and he's from the French-speaking part of Switzerland. So his mother tongue is French. And the name Châtelain is, it's pretty common in Switzerland, not so much here.
Châtelain. When I was practicing before, Châtelain.
Yes, well, it's interesting because Châtelain means keeper of the castle, although he told me he didn't have a castle, but we do now.
You have a castle now, right? Your home, everyone's home is their castle.
That's right.
But Châtelain, which is what a lot of people want to say, actually is the wife of the keeper of the castle, so that probably could be me, but it also is a sewing, a thimble type of thing that people wear around their neck, which is kind of interesting because I sew for a living.
And who knew? That's like, it was going to happen. It was in the stars.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
And we have so much to talk about. online and offline, but I've become obsessed with sewing. And so I brought my, because I brought your holiday presents. Oh. I sewed and made handmade holiday presents for Alicia, and this is my gift. So you'll see my, I want to learn all about your art. I will tell you my art I call Bless Your Heart Crafts, because when I give it to people, they're like, oh, bless your heart. But tell us about all about you, because you're a real live artist. Tell us about, first of all, where you're from and your background and how you got interested in art, all kinds of things.
Okay, that's a lot of questions.
Okay, we'll just start. Where are you from?
Okay, great. I grew up in Pennsylvania, although my family moved around and till I was eight to a lot of different, I think I moved like six or seven times, then finished in Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia. I went to school there, Drexel University. And I had never done art, but I started off at Bloomsburg College and I wanted to be an early childhood education teacher. Mm-hmm. But I took a couple of art classes when I was at Bloomsburg, and I got A's in them. And so when I transferred to Drexel, because, you know, I followed a boyfriend. We've done this before, which I'm not with anymore.
Nobody does it.
I think a lot of young women do this. But anyway, they accidentally put me in the interior design department.
Accidentally.
Good accident, huh?
That's a good accident.
Accident. Because I didn't have A's in my other classes, but I had A's in my art classes. I ended up in interior design, but it was actually a work-study program, a great program. And I worked for an architect and really discovered that I love photography. And they didn't have a photography major, so in my work-study program, I transferred over to working for well-known photography and processing companies in Philadelphia. And I changed all of my electives to photography classes and took them through design teachers. And so I actually feel like I had a wonderful education in that way. And then I was a professional photographer for 10 years. And I definitely would have been voted as the least likely to succeed for my art. But the big difference, I believe, between myself and maybe some of the other students is I found a passion. And I love to draw and I love to take photographs. And so when I would photograph, I really wanted to photograph people. When I would draw, I would draw people. And then when I finished college, I'd always wanted to travel, and so I went with the Peace Corps to Togo, which is a small country in West Africa. And I went as an agricultural education volunteer, and I worked with the primary schools doing teaching them grafting and, you know, animal husbandry and little projects like that. The reason I went for that is because I really had no qualifications for anything else. You know, photography is
funny.
Photography is not really what they're looking for in Peace Corps. And so I was assigned to a small village, and when I went there, there was one other white person in the village. There were 400 people in the village, and we were the only two white people in the village, so we were kind of destined to meet. And for me, it was love at first sight. Oh. Him, not so much. But
I think we're about to get the castle story here. Go on. I'm already seeing this.
Well, he had already, he was a volunteer there, and he was from Switzerland. He had been there for 4 years already. And so we met, and
he was happy.
Yes, we were happy.
He was happy to be there.
Yes, I think he, in the long run, he was happy.
Yeah.
Because he is now, I mean, he's my soulmate. He's my business partner. We literally, if I'm not traveling, spend 24 hours a day together, and we get along great.
I love that. And that was, and this has been for a while. This has been for a few decades, right? I mean,
that was 1981.
Then
I met him in 1980.
So we're new friends. So what you don't know is that what's so interesting is this is the second Peace Corps Togo love story that I know of.
Seriously?
My close friends were Peace Corps volunteers. Actually, one was a staff member. It was a little interesting for a volunteer and a staff member. Anyway, that this was over 30 years ago, and they've been married.
Similar story.
Yeah, they were both with the Peace Corps in Togo, and they connected, and they've been married forever. So there's something about Togo in particular that brings folks together. So, okay, so you met your husband, and now you run the business, but you came back. But there's more, I think, because you spent quite a bit of time in West Africa.
Yes. I was there for 2 years. My husband was there for six. Mm-hmm. And we were married traditionally in the village. Mm-hmm. And our first child was actually born in Togo. She was delivered by midwives, by kerosene lamp. Mm-hmm. I was young and naive. And then...
That's a cute humor she puts in there. Can I? Yeah, I was naive.
Yeah, I was very naive. Anyway, then from there... Nadia was her name, and she really didn't like Africa.
Okay.
So she really didn't. And she was a colicky baby. Nobody told me you're not supposed to eat beans and garlic and tomatoes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So she was pretty colicky. So we left, and we moved to Western Pennsylvania in Bedford, Pennsylvania, where we homesteaded for 2 years. And we, you know, it was 20% unemployment in that area at the time. It was... Not.
That was in the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was pretty...
Hey, in front of the microphone, Alicia, talking.
Hey,
this is a constant issue, Hollis. You'd think that we have not done 97 shows. So Alicia gets so into our guests that she starts asking questions, but not in front of the microphone.
Everybody
you can even be a little closer.
Hey,
yes.
Hey,
all right, so
hi,
ask your question.
She's a good friend.
I know. So, by the way, listeners, I've walked into this close friendship between the two of them.
Yeah.
So, Alicia, we're on air now.
I know.
So, I don't even know what you just asked. So, ask what you...
I just said that was interesting that she did not like Africa.
Because it was hot.
There you go.
It was hot. And we lived in a village with no running water or electricity.
But she was so young. How did she know anything different?
Right.
Because she cried all the time.
Oh, there we go. And I had a colicky baby, too. I didn't realize it was from all the beans and tomatoes and garlic. That baby's 24 now.
Did she cry all the time?
Yeah, when she was a baby, when she was little.
Yeah, she cried all the time.
Yeah. Okay, but so you knew this just isn't right. So you went to Bedford, and you homesteaded.
We did, but we really wanted to go back to Africa.
Yes.
And in the United States, it's much more difficult to go back to Africa unless you are either an agricultural person or with a missionary. And as a missionary,
friend who's a nurse midwife who then went back and they lived there.
I didn't have that qualification either. So we decided to move to Switzerland, where my husband is from, because we knew that we could go back as volunteers. It seemed to be more open, or at least from what we knew about. So we moved to Switzerland, and the first year that we were there, my husband was waiting on a job, and so he stayed home with the kids, and I worked at the University of Geneva as a photographer and a medical drawer. And
a medical drawer.
Yeah.
Oh, you're going to have to dive into that for us.
Basically, it wasn't really that complicated. I did drawings that were used for the students for classes and for publication.
Body parts?
They were cells and more things like that. Mm. And so
the things that we would see in school.
Well, when we look at textbooks, those have been...
That's the type of thing I do.
Wow. You never thought about
so interesting. No. Okay. I'm just so fascinated. Okay. Go on.
And my husband it was unheard of for men to stay home with the children. Mm-hmm. Absolutely unheard of. And they even looked into us, the university, because they said something's not right here.
Yeah.
Why is she working and him staying at home?
Interesting. And by this point, there was another child because you used the plural kids.
Oh, yeah. We had a second child. I forgot.
Okay. Second child. As the youngest.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all right. He owns a restaurant right
down the street.
Your second child owns
my son. He owns Napoli Pizza.
No way.
That's right.
I love that pizza. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go on. Oh, good.
So,
all right.
So she didn't really forget you.
No, I didn't. I not only didn't forget him, but I'm very proud of him.
We're so proud of you. And look, we don't do commercials here, but look, it's because we're, you know, community radio.
The road from
but look,
it.
Napoli, local, go
see,
support
it was all
local.
Set up. I acted like I forgot just because of that.
Okay,
but anyway.
There you go. Plug them. We got a little plug.
It was love it.
Anyway, so
now, when they decided, or you start getting flack about your husband staying home.
Oh, yeah.
I mean... What could they do? They offered him a job.
No, because he was actually waiting on a job. Mm. And so they just thought it was really weird. It's not set up for that. It wasn't then. Switzerland's changed a lot. I mean, I couldn't even buy a car back then if I was married. Well, in the States, you couldn't get a credit card up until 1973.
Yeah.
But it was the same type of thing there, but later. And so it was in 1989. And so I was there from 84 to 86.
Because I know at some point you're going back to Africa in this story.
Right. So yeah. We then moved to the north of Switzerland, and my husband's job came through, and he was the director of a refugee center. And then from there, we had just decided, okay, we're going to stay in Switzerland, and then we saw this job in Burkina Faso. Mm-hmm. And as volunteers for the Centre Écologique Albert Schweitzer, and it was working with solar energy. And so we decided to do it. And so we just picked up and left, and we went to Burkina Faso, and we lived in the capital, which is Ouagadougou. And so we were in the city for the first time. And I actually worked with solar cookers. And it was there that and my husband worked with all kinds of solar energy, plus composting and, you know, all environmental things.
But they are great chefs.
They are great chefs. Well, I'm just gathering. There's so much happening here.
Chefs. They cook things.
So they're chefs, they're artists, they're humanitarians, they're social justice activists. I can already tell. So, all right. So then you're in Burkina Faso.
And it was there that I started. Burkina Faso used to be Upper Volta. Some people know it by that name.
Okay.
But anyway, then it was there that I started creating quilts. Mm-hmm. And I did that because there was no way I was going to sew. I did not like sewing at all. I come from a family of people who sew, but not me. I looked at a sewing machine, the tension went boing.
Okay.
And so I would go to tailors. And I love to go talk to the tailors, and I love the fabrics. And so they were making my clothes, and I noticed they were throwing away a lot of fabric. And so I started saying to them, what are you going to do with that fabric? And they said, oh, we're going to give it to the mechanics to wipe up oil.
And
I said,
and you're like, no,
give it to me. And I started getting this beautiful collection of scraps. But I didn't know how to sew, and I didn't know what I could do with them. And one year when we went to Switzerland for vacation to see family, my husband's brother, right down the road from his house in Geneva, was a quilt shop. And I went in there, and I found a book. It wasn't a how-to book, but it had quilt things, quilt blocks in the back.
Yes. Right.
And I knew how to draw. And so I figured, because I'd been drawing all along and taking a lot of photographs and stuff, and so I said, hey, I can figure out how to do this. And it was absolutely a disaster in the beginning. But I did figure out, I didn't know you had to have seam allowances and stuff like that, which are pretty important.
Again, I'm a super novice sewer. So I'm like, I'm still just learning that. Yeah, okay.
Well, you do need seam allowances.
Yeah, so, okay, anyway, good to know.
Yeah, so I started doing that. And then once I started doing that, people came up to me, women, and said, oh, what are you doing? And so I started teaching women how to do this. So I would go, like, read a book in the evening and figure out how to do it and then teach them the next day.
How to use these fabrics and then create the scraps, create quilts, and then teach others how to do that. Okay, I'm just catching
up. It was actually how to put them together. I never messed with their color sense, their design sense. I never did any of that.
Got it. Just how to, okay.
Just how to put it together.
I love it.
And so I started quilting there. We lived there for 5 years, and then we moved to Mali. Mm-hmm. And people know that's where Timbuktu is, but that's in the way north of the country. And I continued quilting, and I also started teaching drawing and color and design.
Quick question when we go back to quilting, and this is where I'm, you know, geeking out on it a little bit. Now, because you had, I did notice how you said the sewing machine makes you sort of tense up. Were you doing it all by hand?
No. I learned how to use a sewing machine.
Got it. So when you were teaching the quilting techniques, it was on a sewing machine to the others, or were you doing it by hand?
No, I was teaching them by hand. Sorry, I keep saying no.
No, that's okay. We're all good here. So that's helpful. So you were doing it, your own thing, quilting on a sewing machine, but when you taught others, because I've taken some beginning quilter classes and some improvisational quilting and like just, but it's all by hand. And so
they wanted to do it by hand because they didn't have electricity at their house, so they could go home and sew.
That's what I was wondering.
I did have electricity in Ouagadougou.
Got it. Okay. Well, and also just, all the machinery of it. Again, this is my this is what I did for 3 hours last night. Like, I'm so into it. So I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff when you use a sewing machine versus when you just, not just, but when you do it by hand, it's a different.
I started by hand and then I started using a machine, and I quilted by hand for a long time.
And so then you were starting to say, when I interrupted you, then you're in Mali, and then you started to do
classes
on a broader type of art.
Yeah, and I started doing that. I started doing that because one of my friends said, would you teach my kids how to draw? Mm-hmm. I was like, oh. Mm. So finally I said, well, if you can find people to take the class, I'll do it. Mm. And that was how I really started teaching, and I really love teaching, so it kind of came naturally to me. And then we were there for 3 years, and then we moved again, and this time we moved to Benin, and that's down by the ocean.
Okay.
And we lived, for the first time I could see the ocean from my studio, which was really beautiful.
Yeah.
And but very dangerous, because there was a strong undertow.
Oh, okay.
And anyway,
it's okay. Yeah, listeners, if you just heard us do something, it's because the lights just went out here. But
you want me to wave them back on?
It doesn't matter. We just got a little nervous. There was a power thing. It's not our power. Still fine. It's just the lights are weird. It's okay. We're good. Go on. So then you can see the waves, but it's dangerous. And
yeah. It was very beautiful. But anyway, so we lived there for 2 more years. And I forgot to say. In Ouagadougou, mm-hmm. when we were in Burkina Faso, we adopted our third child.
Oh. Okay.
So our third child is from Burkina Faso, and our first child is named Nadia, mm-hmm. our second is Gael, and our third is Karen. And so we adopted Karen when she was between 5 and 6 months old. Mm-hmm. She is a true orphan. She did not have, both of her parents died. And so then our family was complete, but we moved to Mali. Then we moved to Benin. And then we decided to move back to the United States because we could either go to Switzerland or we could go to the United States. We wanted the children to know where they were from, from their parents. Mm-hmm. And we did not want to come just at college, because we'd seen a lot of people who had lived in Africa and their kids just went off to college from there. And it's a pretty difficult transition. It was pretty difficult for our children too, because they were all three bilingual, because I always spoke English to them. My husband always spoke French, but they went to French schools. So when they came here, Nadia went into 10th grade, Gael went into 8th grade, and Karen into 3rd grade. But they hadn't gone to school in English, although I had taught them to read and write in English.
Yeah.
So they were perfectly fluent in both. And they thought in both languages, and, they...
Yeah, and it's... there is an interesting... my friends also, who lived in Africa for many years, 3 children, and also came back at some point when the girls were sort of a mix between teenagers and younger, for that kind of similar reasons, like, all right, let's have a little United States experiences here, especially before college. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is you said you wanted them to know kind of where they're from, but they're from a lot of places. Right. They're from Switzerland. They're from Africa, like, parts within Africa and the United States. So there's a lot of, they're very global.
I mean, they actually are. And I think that was one of the reasons it was a difficult adjustment. But the main reason we came to the United States is I had a dream of making a living from my art. Mm-hmm. I had been doing exhibitions in Africa.
Can I answer your question? Excuse me. Because your work, when I looked at it, were you inspired in Africa to do the pieces that, I don't know, did you get a chance to look at some of those?
I did. I know. We still are in the background where we haven't gotten into your type of art.
Inspire you? Were you inspired there and you came back and did it here? Or did you start it over there?
I started it over there, but I think that when I was in Africa, I was only doing abstract. Mm. So I started out doing, like, patchwork stuff. Mm. And then from there, I started doing my own designs. And imagery was creeping in little by little. Mm. But it was only when I came back to the United States, and I missed Africa so much, that I wanted to do art that showed the love for my love for the people, because that's what I love the most about Africa. The climate's kind of difficult, at least where we live. So
yeah.
it was pretty hot, and but the people were wonderful. Everywhere we lived, the people were wonderful, and we had really good friends. And so I wanted to portray that. And my husband had been pushing me for years to switch from drawing people to putting them somehow in my quilts, but I wasn't sure how to do with it. So I came up with a technique of painting the imagery with thickened dyes on fabric. So this is my own technique, and I started doing it. And when I started doing that, I really like to work big. So one of my pieces, one of the first pieces I did, was 80 inches high and had two great big faces. And so I was the first one in the quilting world that did things like this. It was unheard
of.
And so I want to just, like, because now we're getting into the medium also, and that's what's so fascinating, is that just so we don't miss it. So you paint with dyes. So it's is it like paint that you? So does it look like paint, but you've turned into dyes? Because I've seen some of your pieces, and I am so curious about
you
that.
Know what? When I first met her, I knew her before I saw her work, and I couldn't believe when I went and saw her work in Duke.
Yes, I had an exhibition at Duke Chapel.
And when I saw it in Duke Chapel going down, you know, I thought, okay, something's wrong going on here. Because to know that you took a white piece of blank and you painted it and you dyed it with the color that she made and the yarn that she dyed.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Because I only see one in person, so when I see it, you can't
blank.
Tell sometimes all
right.
of the complexity of the textures and how you're doing the paint. But so I didn't want to take
it.
You were on a great story, and I just wanted to clarify.
Well,
so you're painting with dyes onto material.
So I can quickly explain my technique.
Please do, because
okay.
I'm fascinated by it.
First of all, I'd like to say that much of my work is from my dreams. So
yeah, I saw that in your introduction. There's so much. We're gonna have like three shows with Hollis. All right, so much of it. Go on
Does
with
it
that.
Start with a blank, a piece of like I saw that blank.
No, she starts with sleeping.
Oh,
she's dreaming,
okay.
Alicia.
So
go back to the
dream.
So if I have a dream, and much of my dream, the dreams are statement pieces, and they're often in just one color. And so, in 2002, I dreamed a piece about water. Mm-hmm. And it was in yellow. And so I did research to try to find imagery of what I dreamed like. And then I did drawings from them. So when I first started dye painting, I was using my own photographs from Africa and doing drawings of them. And it was pretty exclusively people.
Got it.
And so I would do a drawing from my photographs. And then from there, I would enlarge it with an overhead projector, like in school, you know, the overhead projectors, onto a great big white piece of fabric, the size of my painting that would be my quilt.
Okay.
And so I enlarge it on the wall, and then I transfer that by tracing it onto a piece of white fabric. The fabric has been dipped in an activator that holds the dye into the fibers. The difference between paints and dyes is dyes adhere to the fiber, paints sit on the surface.
So interesting. Okay, thank you. And again, I come from, my daughters are both really into crafting. And so again, since I'm a bless your heart crafter, I don't understand all this stuff. I'm just like, oh, there's ink. And so this, I'm just, okay, go on. So that's the difference, that how's dye, that's where I was getting at, dye and paint. So this really adheres, it absorbs into the fabric. Got
so it. I trace it onto the fabric, and then I mix up dyes that have, the fabric has the activator in it, and I mix up dyes and I thicken them, and so that they're kind of like thin maple syrup, like real maple syrup. That's what it is. Not,
okay.
You know, not like Aunt Jemima's caramel.
All right, now I'm going to be
real maple
it.
Syrup.
Yes. Okay.
And
the grade A.
Yeah, grade A. That's right. And, then from there, I paint the entire image with paintbrushes.
Okay.
And so if it's from a dream and it's in one color, it's monochromatic, I would paint like six values of yellow from the lightest to the darkest.
Okay.
And that's what I did with Precious Water. Before I started having the dreams, I would paint people in real life colors. And then you cannot leave dyes in fabric because what will happen is the dye activator will eat through, it's soda ash, so it will eat through the fiber eventually.
Oh.
So you have to wash it out. So I wash it out, I iron the fabric, and then I bat it like a quilt.
Okay.
So I put a batting and a backing on it, hold it all together with safety pins, and then I start quilting it. And so for a piece that's a monochromatic piece, let's say the yellow piece, my work is really large, so that piece was like 80 by 80 inches, and it had over 200 different colors of thread in it. It is machine quilted, where I control the quilting. My feed dogs are down, and I use realistic colors. So it has that one has a yellow background, but there is a glow of color throughout.
There's like three different pathways of conversations I want to have from this. I got to write this down. All right. So the first thing is you're making me work so hard in a beautiful way. The fact that you're able to dream something and remember the dream right there. I mean, my daughter has that ability. I don't. I wake up and I immediately forget it. So the fact that this dream is that powerful that you can remember it and that it's got this big visual. I mean, right there, that's a skill set. That's a specialness. So
I don't think it's a skill set. I think it's a gift.
Well, okay. It's a gift. Thank you. Yeah, skill set maybe. I don't know. I think there are maybe some ways you can enhance it. That'd be a skill, but it's a gift. Yeah, it's absolutely a gift. Okay. And that just came to you.
Well, I've always dreamed a lot. And I started having these monochromatic dreams that had a statement behind them in 2002. And the other thing that I learned over the years of having them, because I've had a red dream and a pink dream.
So that's what you mean by monochrome. Is that the
one
dream?
One color
it's,
dream.
Yeah, it's just a one color. So when you're...
I've had blue dreams, several of them. I've had purple dream. And I even was able to meet Archbishop Tutu because I had this purple dream about him.
And then you got that piece.
Yeah, I dreamed that piece. And then meeting him just kind of fell into my lap. It just happened.
What?
And
that's a whole other story.
And then the other thing that's so interesting.
Because, you had a purple dream. You turned it into a piece of art. Archbishop Tutu learned about it, and then you met him.
No,
like, there's so many.
No, somebody just came up to me and said, they just said to me, I hadn't even talked about the piece, and they said, Archbishop Tutu is going to be coming to the college where I work. Would you like to come and meet him? Just, like, out of the blue.
Okay.
And I had been wanting to write to Archbishop Tutu because I'd had this dream, but I just felt like I needed to meet him or something to feel his energy or to write to him, to be able to know more about him before I could make the piece. And while I was thinking about doing that, then this woman came up to me and said that. And so I ended up meeting him. But I had all of these different dreams, and after a while, I realized, after a period of 20 years, my dreams were actually prophetic. And
I'm loving everything about this. Okay. And so in what, because I believe in all this, and I love that you have this gift and have then turned this gift into art. All right. So they're prophetic in what way? Which makes me nervous. Because there can be, in the sense of there can, people who have prophetic abilities, sometimes it's you're prophesizing like problematic things. Like a fire.
Right.
Or
I don't know if I have futuristic abilities. I just have prophetic dreams.
Okay, go on. I'm not going to interrupt.
They make you create the pieces that you create?
No, the dreams actually end up coming true.
That's what she means by prophetic dreams. Is it about, go on more about that. We're talking about, go on more about what a prophetic dream is, like an example, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, before you answer that, did that piece you just did with the shooting, was that prophetic?
No, I didn't dream that one.
Okay.
No.
All right, you're getting ahead of ourselves because we're going to get into that one because that's a whole other, we are tangent queens, Hollis.
Let's do prophetic.
All right, so what's a prophetic dream to you?
Okay, here's an example. I think this is I've had many different dreams, but okay. One, a more recent one, was in 2014, in November of 2014, I had a dream that my daughter, our oldest daughter, was standing in a field, and she had a baby on her hip. Now, she doesn't have children, and she was dressed in a business suit, a skirt and jacket, and she was looking directly at the audience holding this baby like, I can do it. This really determined look on her face.
But she's in a field and looking at an audience.
You did a piece on that, though.
Wait.
This is the piece.
Alicia, you know too much.
Okay, I'm going to sit here.
Okay, go on.
And the piece was hot pink. And as I approached her in my dream, the sky was a beautiful, beautiful sky. And as I approached her, I could see that the sky was completely covered in quotes about women. And there were funny quotes, and there were statistical quotes, and there were sad quotes, and there were power quotes, and all these different quotes. And that basically was my dream. And so I thought, this is really weird. And
yeah, there's a lot happening there.
I said to my husband, I told him about the dream, and he said, hot pink? Really? You're going to make a hot pink piece, a great big hot pink piece? And I said, well, that's what the dream was. So I started to paint this piece in January of 2015.
Okay.
And I had finished painting it, and I was quilting the quotes into it. And I just got stuck. I couldn't go any further. I couldn't figure it out. And I had... I was involved in a critique group for 19 years, and there was a woman who came and critiqued our work, and I had this piece, and I was showing this, and I also had another piece that I had made called Three Crows, about a crow that I had saved, and it then came back, and for like 4 years, it and two friends, I know it was the same, followed me. When I would go walking, he would follow me. And anyway, I was showing that quilt, too. And I said, I don't know why I'm stuck on the big pink one. And she said to me, if there was a fire and you could only save one piece, which one would you save? And I immediately said Three Crows. That was the name of it. And it was like this small piece. And the other one was enormous, and I'd put so much time into it. And I was surprised by my answer. And then I just looked at her, and I said, why did I say that? And she said, because your big pieces become too technical. And I've always loved crows, and I have a relationship.
Yeah, I know. When we walk, they follow us.
Okay, there's so many.
They follow us.
We could go down, I was going to say, squirrel tangents, because I just watched a show the other night where they were talking about the power of crows and all these things. Things
crows
I did not
follow me.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, go.
She's seen it.
I did.
I am showing restraint, even though the listeners will be like, no, you're not. Oh, my gosh. All right, so continue about the propheticness.
So I decided to put the crows in this. And it meant I had to pull out a lot of quilting, but I...
Into the hot pink one.
Into the
and
hot
you,
pink
And you took
one.
It apart?
Yeah, yes. I took part of it apart.
Yeah.
But I wasn't able to work on it because I was involved in another very large project. I made an exhibition with 15 quilts called Stories of West Africa, which was really about, and I have a coloring book with that. It was really about my life in Africa and my stories from West Africa and my photographs and drawings and stuff. But anyway, so I wasn't able to work on it again until January of 2017.
2017. Now, remember, this dream started in November of 2014, right? All right. So, I'm following this storyline.
So, in January of 2017, hot pink made total sense with the pussy hats.
Oh my gosh! Because I'm like, wait, not. I'm thinking of a hot girl. Something. Yeah, the Me Too movement. Okay,
the Me Too movement, and
oh my gosh!
And this is all quotes about women.
So you were ahead of the game. You were definitely ahead of the game.
Yeah.
And I was waiting. I'm like, where's the prophecy coming in or the prophetic? Okay, go on. Sorry.
And so I ended up finishing the piece in, I think, May of something like of 2017. And that then it made sense. The hot pink made absolutely no sense to me in November of 2014.
And that's online too, right?
That's online.
And there are 400 quotes about women in the piece, and they're online too. And in 2014, you could not find a lot of quotes about women. In 2017, you could really find quotes about women.
Okay. So your prophetic dreams sort of pick up moments and movements. Because at one point it was your daughter holding a baby, so I'm like, is it going to be that she has a baby or something? Like, I was trying to see how specific, but it's more, as you say, your dreamlike imagery. I'm still stuck on the fact that you can... I'm still at like ABC of the story, that you can have a dream, remember it, that it has color, and that you can remember it enough to create art from it.
But I've always dreamed in color.
You've always dreamed in color.
I can never remember dreaming in black and white.
I heard something years ago. Is it true that women dream in color, but men dream in black and white? Is that, did I just made that up? I remember. Oh my, we're definitely having another show. So I'm almost going to hold off.
I have too many questions, like that piece I saw with the crocodile.
Yeah, I finished that today.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I hit the microphone. We're going to do, we're going to do a little, since we have about 10 minutes left, I think we're going to do a bigger, we're going to have a whole other show, because I want to dive so into, and you just started to do it, which is using artwork with social movements and that whole process where you've used artwork to help all of the work that you're doing in terms of the causes and the themes and the inspiration. But right now we're going to continue with the Hala story, but just know that there's going to be a second. We're going to book that because I want to use that because I'm so interested in your story, because you're in this pathway. We're still where you left off. You were still in Africa, and you were talking about wanting to come back to the States. Clearly, you came back to the States, but we tangented you somewhere. What brought you back here? And so what brought you to Hillsborough? What brought you to Orange County?
So,
we'll do the Hollis biopic. This is the Hollis biopic show, but clearly, you've got some teasers there.
So, the reason that we came to Hillsborough is because, I mean, when it comes right down to it, it's because my husband owed me a bunch of Four Seasons.
A bunch of Four Seasons.
Seasons.
I got it.
So I really,
because you were in Mali, right? And then
it's very hot.
That's what I've heard too from, and my friends, their kids actually said that too. They're like, we're sick of the heat.
It's really hot.
And so how did you choose? Because you're Pennsylvania, he's Switzerland. Well, where did North Carolina come in?
We wanted to come to the United States because we thought we had a better chance with me making a living as an artist here than in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You had said that. You want to make it. Okay.
And my husband, he had had some health issues, so we moved back for his health issues. But he was willing to switch roles and allow me to try to take the lead and make a living.
Which you had already done at the University of Geneva.
I had.
Before...
Yes, in 1984.
Yes. Nadia was born, but not... Okay, got it.
I was born, too. We had two children.
Okay, got it. So then... And then he was doing the main bringing in the money kind of work, because you were working all that time in Africa as well, creating, designing. Okay, so then...
Dreaming.
Go on, dreaming.
So we came here. My parents were in the Philadelphia area. My sister is in Massachusetts. Oh, yeah. So I wanted to be still close to my parents because I'd been away for a long time. And I love the Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. And I like the East Coast. I love the forest. And North Carolina is kind of a compromise. Mm-hmm. And there were good universities here. And with the Research Triangle, there were a lot of internationals here. And so we came here, and I actually found the house and went, and he was still in Africa when I came here, and I chose the house where we lived, and he said, yeah, you just go ahead and do it. He trusted me.
Sure.
Because I could go in and just feel if it was a good house or not.
Yeah, I'm not questioning this at all. This all makes perfect sense to me.
Most women can do that.
Yeah.
Most.
And so...
it's the opposite in my family. It's my husband. Go on.
We went into Hillsboro, and as soon as we drove into Hillsboro, I said, okay, this is where we're going to live.
This is the right vibe. This is the energy.
This is it.
And your children were school age when you came back. You said 10th grade, 8th grade, and 3rd grade.
So Nadja was 15. Mm-hmm. Kyle was 13.
See, I was paying attention to that. Mm-hmm.
And Karen was 8.
Got it. So then everybody moved and joined Orange County.
Yes, we all came here. We found a wonderful little house, and our house is actually built from the wood from the POW camp that was in Durham in World War II, and they went and tore down the barracks and built some of the houses on our road. And
what?
Our house was
There's
built
a lot
from that
for us
wood.
To learn. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. Oh, Alicia's nodding at me like,
yeah.
You knew this?
Yeah, well.
Okay, anyway, we're not going to tangent anymore. All right. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so then, and then your art took on, because your goal was to make a living through your art. And so
I came back with 40 pieces, and they were all different sizes.
Wow.
And I immediately applied to a whole bunch of different places. And
like the Orange County, like Artists Guild and Open Studios and like those kinds of places, or like galleries?
No,
what do you mean by apply
hidden,
to places?
You were hidden in Hillsboro.
What does that mean by apply to places, I should ask?
So I applied to different galleries.
Galleries,
Dryad Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
That was where I had my first exhibition.
Oh, fun.
And what about Duke, though, the chapel?
Yeah, that was much later. I moved here in 96. That was in 2008, I think.
I moved here in 97. Okay, sorry, go on. I don't know why I got so excited about that. We've both been here you've just hit your 30 years.
Yeah. And wow. So I just little by little. And then I started teaching. Teaching at Thimble Pleasures, and I first taught drawing. That was the first thing I taught, which was really hard because quilters were like, why do I need to learn drawing? But
yes.
They realized that they did, and then I started being invited. I started showing my work in quilt shows, not just at museums and galleries and stuff, and I started winning prizes, and one of my quilts was voted as the one of the top 100 American quilts of the 20th century.
Oh my gosh.
And
I didn't stalk you enough.
And it was one of the first painted quilts I had ever made. And so it was just such a new.
What was the name of that piece? So
it was called Sahel, Sahel, because that was an area where I lived for a long time. The Sahel region, just south of the Sahara Desert. And so it has a baobab tree and two women in it.
What were the colors on that?
Pardon?
What are the colors on that?
Those were realistic colors. Hmm. The girls wearing an orange outfit.
And, okay.
But
so interesting. Okay, go on. So
like I said, I really wanted to do people, and I knew how to draw them, so I taught myself to paint, and I came up with a technique of thickened dyes.
Yeah.
And then people started seeing my work at shows, and they started asking me to teach. So I've taught thousands and thousands
even
of people.
Even today, you're still teaching.
I'm still teaching a lot, yes. Yeah. And I do, now I do a lot of Zoom classes. I'm teaching a dye painting class at my studio in 2 days.
Really?
See, Alicia's kind of right. I tend to hide
when
I'm around.
Alicia's always right. I give her a hard time because she's brilliant and always right. So you do hide.
Well, a background.
What?
In the background. I think it's to have that peace, you know.
I don't know. See, I was often in front of people when I was out. And this all stopped with COVID. Well, it didn't all stop, but I mean, I did a lot of public speaking.
So when you came home.
I did a lot of teaching. Right. I was gone a third of the year doing that. So when I came home, I just, I didn't show in this area. Mm-mm. Duke was one of the only shows that I did. And that was because they approached me and asked me.
Did you want to just go under the radar to create more pieces? Or what? Like
peace, just to have some
The P-E-A-C, You know, I got that. You just wanted peace.
Place, you know.
But it's interesting to be an artist that's hiding because you want to get your work out.
Not hiding.
My work was out.
Restoring and you know, just recreating. You have to have a place where
in the quilting world, if you show a lot of work and you win prizes and and I've won some pretty big prizes.
Yeah.
They want you to stand in front of your work and talk about it. And that's not where I'm the most comfortable.
Okay, I don't know much about this world. I'm so ignorant.
The world is really big. It's a wonderful,
big.
Wonderful world.
I went to one of her events.
Oh, Alicia
I did
went.
Go to one of her events.
She went to California.
I wasn't good on the way back.
That's what Hollis was starting to say, that you went to one of her
and
events.
And I pronounced her name right. It was big. It was like going into a music concert. It's big.
It's a whole world, and so that's where you were like...
And I was in a documentary. They followed me around for a year with two other quilters. And then I was invited to the... it was nominated for an award, the film. So I was invited to Sedona for a film festival. Mm-hmm. I was one of the... It's so funny. I was one of the actors, so they paid my way to come there. And wow, that's a different world.
Yeah. I'm sure.
And yeah, it was... So this film, it was called Stitched, the film. And it's a really fun film. And so they followed me around for a year, and along with two.
Can we see it on Netflix? Like, can we see it on
You used to be able to
YouTube.
See it on Netflix, but I don't know.
Because there's something familiar. All right, here's what I have to do. I can't believe I have to do this. I have to end the show. This is ridiculous. All right, so this show changed very dramatically from what we thought. So this first show was just learning all about just a little. Talk about a piece about Hollis and her art and her journey up until a point, and we are absolutely going to have a part two. I'm not going to let you leave here without scheduling it, where I want to really dive into what you gave a bit of focus on, just about moving from awareness through art and how your art is helping to advance causes. And I have all these questions all about that. And that'll be perfect for our next show when we can really dive into how your art has been able to move that and how you've been inspired and inspiring others, because clearly. So I have to end this, but Hollis, thank you so much
you,
for
Hollis.
Coming on. I told you might run out of time, and we completely did. We didn't even...
It's been a real pleasure to come. I hope I didn't talk too much.
No, gosh, we talked too much.
We have a lot more to talk
you
about.
It's that there's so much. What I want to do is, if you can quickly put your, I don't want to say it wrong, your website so people can learn more about you.
My website's actually really easy. It's hollisart.com.
It really is easy because I found it.
I tell people.
HOLLISART.com.
Great.
Even if you put Hollis into the internet. After Hollister, I think Hollister, and then the town of Hollis up in...
It's coming.
It'll come.
Oh, all right. Well, okay. Hollis, I'm going to say it wrong. Shetland.
Perfect.
Oh, yay. I can't thank you so much for coming on the Aging Well Together show. Alicia, I've missed you clearly, listeners. Alicia and I just need to be back together. And Alicia, for bringing
Stick
your
around.
Good friend and this wonderful artist in to meet us. And thank you to WCOM for hosting us. Thank you to Orange County Department on Aging for sponsoring us. And listeners, thank you for listening to us and joining us on this journey. We've got great shows coming up. And so we will talk to you again next week.